Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the South Bay Show, Preparing for Disaster in America. On Tuesday, March 5th, 2013, I'm your host, Joe Terry, and the South Bay Show is brought to you by Tapas and Vino. Located in the heart of Riviera Village, Redondo Beach, California, Tapas and Vino offers an idyllic location to meet and eat and has quickly become a favorite destination of local foodies. Opened in October 2011, this charming bistro offers an eclectic menu of small plates, salads, soups, and entrees for lunch and dinner daily. In addition, brunch is served every Saturday and Sunday with endless, yes, that's right, endless mimosas and bellinis. The popular outdoor patio boasts a vibrant scene each evening and features live music every Tuesday night. The extensive wine list offers varietals from regions around the globe, and brew enthusiasts will appreciate the comprehensive beer selection. Tapas and Vino also hosts monthly wine and or beer education events, promotes or provides off-premise catering, and has a private dining room for small groups. Tapas and Vino is currently running a Not Just Tapas and Vino campaign. For listeners of the South Bay Show, mention the South Bay Show or South Bay by Jackie and receive 25% off a lunch or Saturday and Sunday brunch entree. Be sure to visit the Tapas and Vino Facebook page for weekly specials and discounts. Tapas and Vino is located at 1729 South Catalina Avenue in Redondo Beach. For more information, visit the website at tapasyvino.com. That's TapasyVino.com. TapasyVino.com. Or call 310-791-8200. That's 310-791-8200. You can find out more about us at facebook.com/The South Bay Show or visit our website at thesouthbayshow.com. Preparing for disaster in America. This is a subject that can never be treated lightly, but we do our best to make it interesting, engaging, and yes, even entertaining to learn the few key skills and primary information that could save your life, your family's lives, that of a neighbor in a time of crisis, or the life of a treasured pet. Our mission is to engage hearts and minds and build knowledge and skills to help you prepare for whatever may come. This show is a true collaboration with solid roots in the community and a partnership with the official disaster preparation establishment. Our producer is the president of the local Manhattan Beach Community Emergency Response Team Association, Mr. George Butts. Hey, George, how are you doing today?
Good morning, Joe. Good morning, listeners. I'm fine.
Good morning, George. And it's a pleasure to talk with you today.
Always.
Always. And, of course, with us today is owner, producer, writer of the SouthBayByJackie.com, of SouthBayByJackie.com, Jackie Balestra. Hey, Jackie, how are you doing today?
I'm well this morning, Joe. Hi, George.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm a man of few words.
So we're back to a subject that we have been talking about before, but with a very special guest, someone who can give us a great insight into one of the largest facilities here on the West Coast that obviously is a target for nefarious people, and also you could say a gateway to the entire country. Jackie, who's our guest today?
Our guest this morning is David Mallon. David has a total of 31 years active and reserve in the United States Marines and is now working in the private sector as the Emergency Preparedness Coordinator for the Port of Los Angeles. He is responsible for all aspects of emergency management for the port and assists in developing, administrating, and coordinating the emergency planning and emergency operations programs. David interfaces with various city departments and other governmental and private entities to develop and implement emergency preparedness programs for city employees. He is responsible for coordinating drills and exercises of emergency plans and preparing after-action reports. He also serves as a board member on the Emergency Management Committee for the City of Los Angeles, which directly influences policies and procedures regarding emergency management for the residents of the city. David is a working group member for Operation Archangel, LAPD, which has been approved by DHS to become the nationwide platform for the buffer zone protection plans. He brings a unique perspective to the emergency management field with a broad telecommunications and information technology background. Welcome to the show, David. We are so glad you could join us this morning.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me. I appreciate the opportunity. Just one little correction. 31 years military, and it was both Marines and Air Force. I don't want my Air Force brethren and sisterhood out there to feel slighted at all. I only did 6 years in the Marines, and the rest of it was mostly Air Force.
My mistake.
That's okay. That's all right. I could just hear it now. People that listen to this and they find out, wait a second, you spend most of your time in the Air Force.
Yes, we don't want any false pretenses here. No.
Exactly.
Well, thank you for joining us today. Welcome to the show, David. It's the Port of Los Angeles is something that I think many people, even in Los Angeles, aren't aware is as huge and has as huge an impact on the security and safety of the United States as it does. But I wonder if you could just give us a few facts about the Port of Los Angeles that frame the discussion in terms of how big it is and how much traffic or goods and services actually come through there.
Okay, well, let's start. First of all, you have a better understanding. I know everyone always says the Port of L.A., but in reality, you got to think of it, the Port of L.A. and the Port of Long Beach. Mm. Even though we are direct competitors with one another, as an entity between Port of L.A. and Port of Long Beach, you know, we are the number one container port within the United States. Most of the imports that come from overseas end up coming through both the Port of L.A. and the Port of Long Beach, and they get spread throughout. I heard a statistic recently that said about 43% of the nation's goods come through both ports together as a whole. So when you hear about the port shutting down, it doesn't just necessarily affect just what happens in Los Angeles or San Bernardino or just the Southern California region. It affects the nation. So it's important to understand that. The Port of L.A., just the Port of L.A. alone is about 7,500 acres, and we have about 43 miles of waterfront. Between that, we have 77 container cranes. Of that, there's about 270 berths, and we also, believe it or not, have 16 marinas, which house about 3,795 recreational boats. Of course, I'm looking at one of my stat sheets here, so that's why I'm able to just read these stats off to you so quick and easily.
Right.
It's not like I have all this memorized. But, here's the other one that I want you to understand, too. Whenever you see a truck driving down the road and you see one of those the 18-wheelers and they've got the long container, those are known as 40 TEUs, and it stands for tonnage equivalent units. The way we actually count containers that come into the United States is not really by you count each one individually. We count it by TEUs.
Right.
So when you see one of those long ones, that's a 40, and when you see a half-size one, that's a 20. Well, just to give you an idea, we do about 8 million TEUs a year. That's the L.A. side. The Long Beach side is just slightly below that. I don't have their statistics right off, but it's very close to that. So you figure between the two ports, we're doing close to, about 16 million TEUs a year. That's a lot of cargo.
That's a lot of cargo. A lot of cargo. Well, over 40% of what comes into the United States. And
that's huge.
So, you know, give us a general introduction. Where is the Port of Los Angeles? Some people know, obviously, here in Los Angeles, but relatively speaking, the Port of Long Beach is south of the Port of Los Angeles. The Port of Los Angeles is south of LAX Airport. Give us just an introduction to the port, how long it's been there, which I know is a long time, and other general issues about its impact on the economy locally here, and then we're going to talk about how to keep it safe.
Okay, so first of all, look, to give you an idea of where it's at, it's located in the community of San Pedro, which is one of the neighboring communities of the city of Los Angeles. But in reality, it's in the South Bay area. Mm-hmm. It is believe it or not, it's one of the kickoff points when you want to go to Catalina. So we have one of the terminals. It's right next to the Vincent Thomas Bridge, for people that know about the Vincent Thomas Bridge. Long Beach is actually not south. Long Beach is actually east of the harbor. The harbor, when you look at the Vincent Thomas Bridge, I think the bridge, if you look as you're driving from San Pedro to Long Beach, if you look left, you're looking north, and if you look to the right, you're looking south. And there's the, you know, we part of that is, besides just being container terminals and that type of stuff, we also have a huge cruise center, you know, where we do a lot of cruise traffic per year. And then our, you know, one of our latest things that we got, which we were fortunate to get, was the USS Iowa. So where Long Beach has the Queen Mary, we were fortunate enough to get the USS Iowa.
An aircraft carrier?
No, it's not an aircraft carrier. It's one of the World War II Iowa class battleships.
Okay.
It was the same ones that were attacked during Pearl Harbor, like the Arizona and Missouri.
I see.
So it's one of those.
I see.
Yes.
Wow.
It's, oh, yeah, you wanted to know how long has it been around. Well, it's like one of the first ports that was actually ever put in the United States. And if you look at it, the natural topography of Los Angeles, and I have not read all my history going way back, but when you looked at the natural topography back in the early 1900s, it was a natural location when they were doing surveys up and down the California coast where it was naturally protected. So it made sense that it was roughly – it was also one of the few areas in the location of Southern California that also didn't have all the mountains. It was naturally flat in that part. So when they looked at it, it just made sense with that Palos Verdes Peninsula sticking out that did some natural protection from waves coming from the north and from the west to put the port into that location.
Right. I mean, the history is long and varied, apparently starting in something like 1542 when Juan Rodriguez Cabrillo discovered the Bay of Smokes, as it was called then. But then, so David, let's talk about how you can approach or how you can even strategize to be looking at the emergency preparation for the port. How do you give us the 30,000-foot view? How do you just – oh, and it employs the current port today, along with Long Beach, employs 16,000 people. So how do you secure a city like that?
Okay. It's funny you say that because really when you start looking at what the Port of L.A. and the Port of Long Beach employ, you've got terminal – you got to think of the ports as leaseholders, basically.
Mm.
The there's a thing called the State Tidelands Act, and the state deeds the property over to the city of Los Angeles and the city of Long Beach to run the port and make it prosperous. So long as both cities do that in a – fair and equitable manner and a profitable situation, and the money gets reinvested back into the port, the cities are allowed to run the port as they see fit. So hence, the city of Los Angeles has a department, which I work for, called the Harbor Department, and Long Beach has the Port of Long Beach. Mm-hmm. That's just the two, really, the names of the two entities.
Mm-hmm.
Each agency basically has a bunch of civil service employees that administer and run the leasing of property to tenants. So, for instance, when you see all the traffic that's going on in the Port of L.A. or the Port of Long Beach, it's not Port of L.A. employees and it's not Long Beach employees that are running it. It's actual individual companies mm-hmm. that are leasing property from the cities to run their operations.
Okay.
And then when you hear about the people who are helping to unload cargo and put cargo back on the ships and move those cargo containers, and I like to call it intermodal transportation corridors, throughout the area, those are normally longshoremen.
Mm-hmm.
They're union employees, but they don't work for us.
Right.
So I have to kind of explain that there are two separate entities when it comes to who actually works in the port, works for the port, and who actually is separate. So you have three. You have municipal government, you have terminal operations, and then you have people who are union, a lot of union workers that are independently contracted depending upon what ships come in. And that's really like the three.
Now, also, the port has its own police force. Is that true?
Yeah. Now I'm going to go a little bit into talking about the security and stuff.
Right.
Each department, again, Long Beach and L.A., has our own police agency. The Port of Los Angeles, we have our own police department. It is a fully qualified. There's a ordinance out there. I think it's 830.2. I think it is. They have the same police powers as the Los Angeles Police Department. We have our own department that is just responsible just for the port. They do go helping and assisting the surrounding communities and trying to figure out where the community ends and where the port begins and vice versa. You know, we try to consider it one and the same. You know, we don't just stop because that's our borderline. You know, we will go a little bit further in, as you know, and help out when assistance calls are requested. And then Long Beach has security. They have a harbor security, but they use more of the Long Beach Police Department when they have to do arrests and that type of stuff. So there are two entities. Now, the third – all right, so you've got the local law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have to start talking about all the other agencies that are involved. As well, the Sheriff's Department sends resources down to the Port of Los Angeles and the Port of Long Beach. LAPD has an area called the Harbor Division for LAPD. They have joint jurisdiction in the area. And then you also have, don't forget, all the federal entities that are out there. You got to realize that part of on Terminal Island, you have the U.S. Coast Guard. Mm-hmm. You have Customs and Border Protection. You have immigration and ICE. What is it? Immigration, Customs Enforcement. You have I'm forgetting the other one. It's ICE, and then they have the other one. I don't want to say Border Patrol, but I have seen Border Patrol showing up at some of the meetings because that, believe it or not, illegal smuggling of people from other countries does happen every now and then.
DEA.
You got DEA, drug enforcement. Oh, that's a very big deal, especially recently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay. So now your department, the mm-hmm. department you're responsible for, you're doing emergency preparation, planning. When you're approaching, let's say a review of the total plan that you have, how many different components are there to the plan that you've put together?
Well, I understand this too, that the Port of Los Angeles, the Harbor Department, is part of the city's master plan,
mm-hmm.
where one department that falls under the master plan for the city of LA. But when you start looking separately at all the different entities that encompass all the various emergencies that can happen, we look at, you know, and there's a FEMA guideline talking about like 18 different types of disasters that could occur, terrorism being one of them.
Mm-hmm.
But of those 18 that are possible, and this doesn't just apply to the port, it applies everywhere throughout the United States. Of the 18, Southern California is subjected to about 14 of them. Obviously, we very rarely get hit with a hurricane, though. If you look at historical figures, that has happened before. We don't really get hit with tornadoes, but every now and then I've seen since I've been there a tornado spout. What was some of the other, I forgot the two others that we're not really subjected to, but almost everything else that can happen in a natural disaster seems to love Southern California.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. So give us an example of, either some of the drills and the preparation events that you hold, or what are some of the disasters and how you prepare for them that you really expect to take place in the next several years?
Well, for instance, we working with the Coast Guard and with all the entities that we normally work with on a routine basis, we hold joint exercises.
Mm-hmm.
And exercises are really broken down into tabletop, orientation, functional, and then full scale. And depending upon what we want to test, and, you know, we try to test our plans to the exercises that we're conducting. We come together as a whole. We create some exercise objectives, and then we test those objectives against what we're trying to do. We have joint command centers all over the place, as well as the city of Los Angeles has an EOC, which is located downtown L.A., semi-close to Dodger Stadium. And then Long Beach has one near the Long Beach Airport. So the two cities have two emergency operation centers. And, you know, from we try to encompass what would happen if everything went to hell in a handbasket. How do we get resources to supply not only just the port, but remember I said 43% of the nation's commerce. Our goal in a major disaster, for at least when you look at it from the port's perspective, is we need to get that commerce flowing again.
Right.
That should be, you know, obviously life safety and, you know, property protection is number one right off the bat. But if you look at what is the goal of the Port of Los Angeles, everyone keeps thinking, and I hear it constantly, that, well, your job is to protect the community of San Pedro, Wilmington, Harbor, and, you know, areas near Long Beach, because we're the Harbor Department. We're right there. And in reality, that's not really what our goal is. Our goal is to get the flow of commerce going again, because, that is a ancillary thing that we will try to do, is to help out the local community. Mm-hmm. But our main objective is to move cargo, because you got to realize, you shut down the Port of Los Angeles, you're shutting down 43% of the nation's commerce, and a lot of your food comes through the port.
So
we've got to feed the United States.
So in terms of looking at the threats for the Port of Los Angeles, if I were a planner, I would not be looking at threats that would kill or maim. I would be looking at threats that were designed to shut down the port. And I suppose those threats can be real or imagined. For instance, I'll just throw one out there. If I want to shut down a port or any large sort of commerce operation, I'm gonna sort of try to make someone believe that there's an explosive device somewhere or something like that, so that they have to shut down and look for it. Does that happen on a regular basis? How often do you get threats that there are, you know, various kinds of devices and so forth at the port?
It's, you know, you gotta look at the Port of Los Angeles, how big it is.
Mm.
Say, for instance, you did put an explosive device and it blows up.
Mm.
Really, what kind of impact would you do? I mind you, serious, very serious. I get it. It's a serious thing. Operations would be shut down for a period of time. Obviously, we'd have to be searching a lot of different things. But what kind of damage would you actually do? You shut the port down maybe for a day or so, right? Maybe two. But a day or two of shutting down the port isn't really going to stop us. Right. We'll still – I mean, that's – you've seen strikes before that have gone longer than that. We'll just – you know, we could move ships to other terminals and stuff like – if need be, and in the case of a real major disaster.
Mm-hmm.
Or – we can, you know, back the ships up for a period of time and get them going after that occurs. So you're not really doing anything. I mean, you are, but you're not. To me, this is, again, Dave Mallon speaking, what would be much bigger of a disaster, because mind you, an explosion is one localized area. And, okay, so you try to plant multiple explosive devices. Very difficult. You got to realize everywhere you go on that port, there's eyes on you.
Right.
So that's a good thing. You know, I'm not going to say where we have it, but we got eyes everywhere. So that's an important thing.
So if you visit the Port of Los Angeles, you're a movie star.
You're a movie star. Yes.
That's all we need to say.
That's all you need to know.
I'm going. I have been. Well, no, I was. I was a Mel Gibson once.
By the way, that's a big part of the Port of LA too. We do a lot of filming down there.
Right.
Well, part of the port police is they actually do the permitting for the movie industry as well, because they like to shoot and use that area for the local entertainment industry, which is just as important. But to me, the number one thing, and this is not just the port, this is all Southern California, South Bay, Los Angeles, San Bernardino, Ventura, San Diego, earthquake.
Right.
Because I promise you, there will be another earthquake.
Right.
This is the one thing I can put on my Karnak the Magnificent hat and go, there will be an earthquake.
Right.
I've been preaching that for years.
And
somebody agrees with me.
And earthquake will do more damage than other than a nuclear bomb, of course, will do more damage than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
I'm one of those that lived through the Northridge earthquake. I lost my condo.
Right.
It wasn't really the Northridge earthquake. It was the Reseda earthquake.
Right.
I guess they said the epicenter, as close as they could tell, was Corbin and White Oak, and I was about a block and a half away, and I lost my condo during that thing.
So now another way of, and I'm sorry to take this tack, but
that's okay.
I want to get to what our major threats are. Another way of shutting down the port would be simply calculating all the entry points and shutting down the roads on entry or exit from the port, and that might be a tough thing for a terrorist organization to do, but Mother Nature could do that. Mother Nature could shut down your access points.
Yes, that is definitely a possibility. You know, if you look at the map, you could see that there's basically three bridges. That's no, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to see that. You can see that with Google Earth.
Yeah.
But the way, the main way commerce gets out of the port, for the most part, is through the why am I going brain dead all of a sudden? It's through the rail.
Mm-hmm.
But the Alameda Corridor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
A majority of our cargo and the game plan is to take containers strictly from straight from the ship, put them onto the trains, and the trains to take straight off without having to put them on flatbeds. And we keep, as you know, as both terminals keep expanding, that's the number one goal that we try to do, is to put all that stuff so you don't have to have all the trucks on the road.
Right. And I guess it's kind of a it's not productive to go through all the different scenarios about how the harbor might be attacked and then what possible scenarios there are for protecting it, because of course we don't want to give anyone any ideas, and we aren't giving anyone any ideas. If they're thinking about attacking the harbor, they're doing their research, I'm sure. But what do you do, David, on a regular basis? How often do you guys have, for instance, these large-scale disaster preparation sort of mock drills?
Oh, we have that at least, I would say, at a minimum once a quarter. Now, mind you, they're not always full-scale, because that takes away from the resources of actually doing day-to-day duties and deployment of resources and that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But we work on plans. We review the plans. We're constantly trying to enhance our preparedness. A part of the emergency preparedness part is doing more of the business continuity. What should happen if, say, for instance, one day we do have the major earthquake and we can't access a facility? How do we continue our normal restoration of services, but all of a sudden the office that I used to use on a Monday through Friday is no longer available?
Mm-hmm.
So you have to think in a mindset of – and this goes, again, for everybody – I'm going to give you a perfect example of how most residents of Los Angeles are never prepared properly, and neither are the businesses. We just had the windstorms. How long ago? About a year ago? Not even a year ago?
Mm-hmm.
That happened in Pasadena, Altadena. It took how many of Southern California Edison, DWP, and all the other emergency companies from all over sending all the resources that they could bear to bring up that community? And how long were they down for? It was about a week to 2 weeks people were without power.
Yeah.
And they said millions and millions of dollars were lost. But the problem was, that was just a small, simple windstorm. That was nothing. That was a nothing event. And it just proves my point of, it doesn't matter how many times I beat this drum. I could be on a podcast every single day. I wish that everybody would listen to me all the time, but they don't. I mean, I practice what I preach. I have a generator. I have tons of water. And when someone says, and I know all the websites, all the emergency management websites tell you 72 hours. I'm going to tell you right now, if you only have 72 hours worth of provisions, you're out of your mind.
Well, we agree with you.
I'm just letting you know, to me, I keep over a month. And then when it comes to food, I probably have way more than that. And water, I have way more than that. But to just keep 72 hours worth of – it was 7 days to 2 weeks for a windstorm. What's going to happen when the whole region is impacted? You think 72 hours is going to save you? Nope.
Right, right.
George, I think David is your new best friend.
Yeah. He sounds like he's been through my CERT class.
Yeah, the two of you need to go on tour.
I have taken the CERT class. I'm an extra class ham radio operator. I've personally gone through a disaster, lost my place, lived in a RV for 9 months until I was able to find a house that I considered suitable. So I had to go through all – but the good thing was, is I had everything in order. When it came time after a disaster to show proof that I was devastated and that I lost everything and I owned this and I had insurance and I had to show to the insurance adjuster what I had, what got destroyed. I had all my records in order. I mean, I literally handed the guy a package and he looked at me like, you got to be kidding me. He's like, you did all my work for me. It was that comprehensive and that well prepared. I keep a filing cabinet. I took pictures and video camera of everything that I own in the house so that when he showed up and he says, well, how do I know you own this? And I go, well, here's the pictures. Here's videotape. You can go look at it to your heart's content. There's proof. There's proof of what it looked like before. There's proof of what it looks like in the trash can. And there's the receipts. And there's pictures. And there's my insurance claim. And I went through that. I mean, I actually went through that. It turned out I didn't have enough insurance. I should have had more, but that's okay.
And you still ended up living in a trailer for 9 months?
I lived in a trailer. Well, don't worry, because I ended up buying a trailer. Part of my insurance thing was that any rent that I have to do up to a year is covered. So they covered the cost of the rental fees for the trailer space. And when I say it's a fifth wheel, it was a 36-foot weekend warrior. Mm-hmm. I ended up buying it right after the earthquake immediately. You know, I do keep enough cash. That, again, that's part of my preparedness thing, keeping cash readily available to spend. I bought a 36-foot fifth wheel and put it in Northridge of all places mm-hmm. because I knew I was going to have to go constantly back and forth to that condominium, which was red tagged, by the way. That's why I lost the place, is the building. I had a brand new view of the parking garage from the third floor of the building, from inside the bedroom, not outside. The walls separated. So I was able to see straight down. That's why I had to move out of the place and I lost the place. Everything was covered. I mean, when it was all said and done, I basically even sold the RV for a profit. I mean, I made out. I went from a one bedroom, one bath condo to a three bedroom, two bath home, which I'm still in today. And when it was all said and done, I had more equity in the place and my mortgage payment was cheaper. I made out golden, but of course, when you're first going through the disaster, it was devastating. It was absolutely devastating because you thought you lost everything. But the good thing was, is I, as part of my preparedness effort, as much as you have food, water, and you know the Maslow hierarchy of needs, so long as that stuff was taken, I also did financial planning, which is just as important of making sure I have the proper insurance.
Right.
Yep. Very important, because you don't have insurance. Yeah, a lot of people say, "Well, we'll just let government take care of us."
Well, David, we're going to talk about more of those topics and more about the Port of Los Angeles in a moment. We're the South Bay Show, preparing for disaster in America, with David H. Mallon, Director of Emergency Preparation and Emergency Management at the Port of Los Angeles. And we'll be right back to him after this break. We're going to thank a sponsor. Who are we going to thank today, Jackie?
Well, you know, Joe, it's never too early to begin planning your financial future. When it comes to protecting your assets and hard-earned dollars, you'll want experienced professionals with a proven track record and flawless reputation on your team. Briganti, Cameron, Waters & Strong, certified public accountants and consultants, is the largest full-service accounting firm in the South Bay, and they are dedicated to providing professional services of the highest quality. The partners are South Bay residents deeply committed to serving the communities where they live, work, and play. They support a variety of local nonprofit organizations such as Skate Park PV, Palos Verdes Peninsula Land Conservancy, the Torrens South Bay YMCA, Palos Verdes Rotary, and Pediatric Therapy Network, among others. BCWS prides itself on providing national accounting technical experience with the personal attention of a local company. This commitment to uphold high standards of excellence has proven key to their success and first-rate reputation. Their ultimate goal and reward is to see their clients achieve financial success as they define it, whether that means helping them to reduce their tax burden, assisting them with planning to ensure their financial security, succession planning, exit strategies, and wealth transfer. The partners and professionals of BCWS are committed to providing their clients with the expertise and guidance they need to reach their financial goals. Briganti, Cameron, Waters & Strong is dedicated to helping you navigate to financial success. For more information, you can visit the website at www.bcws.com or call 310-542-0011 for a free consultation.
All right. Great. I'm not sure, David, what the most serious threat would be to the harbor. What do you think? What is the most serious threat to the port of Los Angeles?
Earthquake.
Really?
Yeah, without a doubt. Because when you think about what happens during an earthquake, we're going to end up losing power.
Mm-hmm.
And when you lose power, guess what doesn't operate when you lose power?
Cranes. Yeah, right.
Cranes.
So no power, no cranes. I mean, yeah, you could say a major U.S. blackout. That's probably just as serious.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I hear a lot of talk about there's the possibility that we'll bring in these huge generators. Well, if you understand how some of these cranes work, you'll quickly find out the generators aren't powerful enough. We require commercial power. It has to be very strict. There can't be fluctuations in the voltage and in the current loads.
Right.
And we need that stabilized power. So, you know, part of that, that's part of the planning that we do. We're, you know, airport just put in their own cogeneration plant, hopefully in the future, you know, as one of the major improvements for the port is to look at possibly putting in our own cogeneration plant. We'll see. You know, it's very expensive, and there's a lot of hurdles and obstacles that we have to do. Go ahead.
David, how long have you been working with the Port of Los Angeles?
May will be 10 years.
10 years.
Yep.
So that's a significant experience in your position. I'd just like to ask you, 10 years. So, you know, we are – you know, just a little bit more than 10 years out from 9/11. And I just, your opinion, how have we been able to skirt a major 9/11 type of disaster? And I know there's two halves to that. There's the war that we've taken to them where they live and work in other countries, and the protections that we have here with DHS, Department of Homeland Security. But do you think we are safer now than we were then, or do you believe that there will be threats like 9/11 again in the future?
Oh, that's hard to say.
Well,
I'll give you my personal perspective of it. I mean, there's, you know, obviously there's been huge, and we're paying for it dramatically. If you look at what's happened with the country, with the debt that we're in, all this is a direct effect from 9/11. If you remember, if you go back, and mind you, I'm not a fan of the Democratic Party. That's okay. You could beat me up for it if that's your case. That's fine. But, you know, Clinton had us on the path of going to a positive cash flow, believe it or not, getting us completely debt-free.
Mm-hmm.
From that, we get hit with 9/11, and now we are in the worst financial deficit this country has ever faced.
Mm-hmm.
Who do you want to blame, Democrats, Republicans? It doesn't really matter because we're broke.
Right.
Let's put it, we're broke. Now, we've beefed up. We've created a TSA, a whole other entity. We spent trillions of dollars going overseas with our military and have been there since, basically, right after 9/11. Hell, I've gone once myself to Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. I don't know if doing all that basically says we're completely safe.
Right.
I can tell you there's a lot more resources put towards the intelligence community. But I'll tell you what, if somebody has bad intentions and is willing to give their life for it, there's nothing you or I or anyone else can do to prevent that.
Right.
Yeah.
There's always that that caveat that the lone gunman or the lone terrorist who's willing to pay the ultimate price, there is no planning that you can do to prevent that unless you live in a totalitarian society.
Correct.
Only when you control everything and there is no freedom can you protect against that. And then maybe not even that then because, of course, individual will is something that has never been surmounted. So you think we're safer or less or not as safe as we were?
Well, to me, the fact that at least in California, New York, and Chicago, I mean, I'm going to hit a political agenda that's, you know, probably very, very sensitive. I am of the belief that everybody should have the right to carry their own firearms. Trust me, that is not my department's belief.
I thought we had that right.
Oh yeah, right. Good luck. Not so long as you, especially in Los Angeles County, where there's only about 200 concealed weapons permits issued. This is a may issue state, and self defense, according to the sheriff, is not a justifiable cause for you to be able to carry a firearm. I'm sorry, but that's just, you know, the way it is. But in 46 other states, approximately, I might not have my facts 100% right. That is a inherent right that you have, if so long as you are an outstanding citizen, and not even have to be an outstanding citizen. So long as you're not a convicted felon, you have a pretty much clear background, no domestic violence issues and stuff like that. You're willing to take some necessary training. You have the fundamental right to be able to carry. Well, unfortunately, I keep seeing the numbers of the cities that do not have concealed weapons permits. I keep seeing that number go up.
Right.
And that's, as a matter of fact, as a city worker, it's happened to me. It happened to me in 1995 over at Piper Tech. I had four of my coworkers killed.
Right.
And none of us were. And of course, after that, of course, it was a department memo that came out, which I really make fun of to this day. It says no coworker, no city employees are allowed to bring firearms into work. Well, hello, we know that.
Right. The only person that brought one was the bad guy. To kill.
Yeah. I mean, just recently, Seal Beach just had its shooting. We have shootings all the time. And the funny thing is the bad guys don't care. You could pass as many firearms restrictions as you want, so you're blue in the face.
Right.
You'll always be able to get that. And that's an unfortunate thing. I believe in less government and taking on more personal responsibility. But again, that's Dave Mallon speaking. I'm not speaking for my department. I'm speaking for me. Okay. For as a government representative, my goal is to sit there and try to help and restore a restoration of services as fast as I can. But I'll tell you what, there's maybe between Department of Water and Power, Airport, the Port, and the rest of the generally funded city departments, there's maybe, I think, 35,000 employees, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And there are in the city of Los Angeles, about 4 million residents. You try to do the numbers. How are we supposed to provide for everyone?
Yeah.
And you'll quickly see those numbers don't work out. Now, when you start talking about how many law enforcement officers are there and fire department personnel are there, you're going to quickly see that, wow, okay, so I live in this community. You're lucky if you see, 12 patrol cars in the entire area, plus how many fire stations.
Right.
You're going to quickly find out if there's a major earthquake, you're not going to get the response that you think of.
Well, David, as we often talk about on this show, whether it's disaster or it's security, largely we are on our own when it comes to, the big event, the big one, as it's called. And we all have to be prepared for that, because the existing resources, the existing first responders are going to be busy, very, very busy for as much as a couple of weeks, with the hot spots, wherever the major areas of the disaster have hit and there's life and limb at stake. And so we are going to be on our own. You have a month's worth of water. Well, you're going to need food. You're going to need, as you said, cash or other elements that you can use to barter with for food. And so it's just something that everyone has to do on their own. They have to be prepared.
Absolutely. And I'm not one of these doomsday preppers, not even far from it. I mean,
mm-hmm.
Some of those people are going to the super extreme and building their I'm nowhere even near that.
Right.
I look at it from a more reasonable standpoint. Because really, if you prepare for earthquakes, you're really preparing for probably 95%, hell with that, 99% of the things that are going to happen.
Right.
I always look at it, if it is the atomic bomb, I don't want to be a survivalist after that, personally.
Right.
To me, I consider, well, game over, job's done, that's it. But everything else is survivable, and, at first you're going to say, oh, my God, I'm devastated. But you know what? Given time, you'll quickly find out that everything will be okay.
Right.
The problem is, how well will you be okay between those two points?
Right.
Will you be able to live in somewhat comfortable style, or are you going to be one of those, oh, my God, I got to start scourging for everything?
Right.
And to me, I like keeping my water. It's not hard. I don't make it anything difficult. I make it everything a very reasonable thing that I do. I don't buy little things of water from the store. You end up paying more for water than you do for gasoline. That's ridiculous. I buy those big 5-gallon jugs, and I have like 18 of them. Right. And I go to the water store and I just fill them up for like, what was it, like 35 cents a piece or something like that.
Right.
And that's, and I just rotate my water that way. I just keep that cycle going. Same with food. I just rotate food. I don't buy MREs. I hate – hell, I was in the military. I'm not eating that junk.
Yeah.
They're terrible tasting. Yeah. I just – what works really good in an emergency is pasta. You just have to be able to heat up. Heating up is no big deal. They say, well, your gas line's cut. I go, I got propane tanks. Got tons of them.
I can see you weren't in the Marines very long. You don't like MREs?
No, I don't like MREs. Actually, believe it or not, when I first went in, it was the C-Rat. So I went in 82. I did 82 to 87 in the Marines. Then it was Air National Guard. Then it was Air Force Reserve.
I see. So,
yeah.
I see.
Yeah. If anybody who's eating MREs, and look, those things are designed so that if you're really working hard all day, they put in a lot of high calorie content.
Right.
It's not designed for somebody who's just trying to just be, a normal dietary restriction and that type of thing. That thing's going to pack on pounds fast.
Right. Well, not if you're packing a 50-pound pack.
That's what it's designed for.
50 hours, five
right.
hours a day.
Exactly.
So, David, at this time we normally have some announcements of future shows and just some announcements in general. George, what do we have coming up?
Well, starting tomorrow evening and ongoing, our co-host, Miss Jackie, I am going to assume, is still teaching a self-defense class for women designed for women by women. Mm-hmm. And that is on every Wednesday evening, the Triton Room at Fitness Evolution, 200 North Harbor Drive in Redondo Beach. Jackie, how's it going?
It's going really, really well.
Very good.
Yeah, it's growing a little bit at a time. It's growing. I think we're gonna do chokes this week.
All right.
Okay.
Chokes from being choked from on the ground. Yeah.
So you're gonna have guest men come and get choked.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
We call them our test dummies.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Never mind. Okay. The throat's already bad enough. All right. And something new in, we have not spoke. The Tri-Cities and through the city of Hawthorne in L.A. County Fire is going to hold a CERT class on three Saturdays, March 16, 23, and April 6th from 9 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. No class on Saturday the 30th. They're going to bump that. That's the day before Easter. And if anybody is interested, you may contact Claudio Taniguchi, who is the Emergency Preparedness Coordinator for the City of Hawthorne, at 310-349-1687. Now, this is the same class that we in Manhattan Beach are also doing this weekend. We do have some openings left. Our class will start this coming Friday evening. It is from 6 until 10 Friday evening, and then it is all day Saturday and Sunday, so you're only taking one weekend out of your life. And we will get in your 20 hours of training. If interested in that and would like some more information, you may contact me at info@mbcerta.org. Also coming up, we have been doing CPR and AED training to our residents, and we will continue on March 30th. It is the Saturday before Easter. We will have an AM class from 8 a.m. to 12 noon, up to 20 participants. We're about half full right now. And then down the road also, on April 27th, a Saturday, we will have an AM and a PM class. On June 22nd, we will have an AM and a PM class for residents of the South Bay. The cost for the CPR is $45 per person, which will get you a certificate and your little two-year card from the American Red Cross. For those interested in taking our CERT class, we do charge $60. But for that $60, we provide you with much more than $60 worth of of materials and information. So that is that's what's going on there. Next week, next Tuesday morning, a week from right now, my guest I expect to have is Rick Bisaw from the Civil Air Patrol. Many people, the Civil Air Patrol is still around. Of course it is. It's a number of civilians that get together that fly airplanes and or are just interested in helping as observers. The Civil Air Patrol for years and years, and I couldn't tell you how many, but probably back into World War II or shortly thereafter, does a lot of search and rescue, and they continue to do search and rescue. And Rick will be on the show, and on the 19th, I'm hoping for a direct representative of the American Red Cross and their outreach. Also, we've had some of their partners, their ambassadors on before. But that's what's going on right now in the South Bay. Jackie, did I miss anything?
No, you got everything. I have a cousin in the Civil Air Patrol.
Hmm. There you go.
He's been doing it for about 50 years.
My mother was an officer in the Civil Air Patrol back in the 60s, so mm-hmm. I was one of the juniors back then.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
That's how old I am.
You could have been a freshman.
A freshman Civil Air Patrol. Okay.
Well, that would have made you, you know, less old. You would be younger then. No?
No. All right. I'm done.
Well, thank you very much, George, for that. And we look forward to those future discussions. David H. Mallon, thank you for joining us today.
Oh, you're very welcome. I enjoyed it. Hopefully I didn't go too much on my banter on certain things. But, you know, again, the thing that I want people to remember, taking CERT classes, first aid, absolutely essential stuff for your, you know, for the health and preparedness. Also learning AEDs is very important, just the same. Mm-hmm. Understanding how to use one of those can actually save a life.
Right. That's the automatic emergency defibrillators?
External?
Is it?
I think it's external. Oh, God. Here, now we gotta get that term right. I can't believe you put me under the pressure like
no,
that.
Again.
Yeah, it is. That's what it is.
Yeah, automatic external defibrillator. That's it.
Yeah. You see that? You see those in a lot of offices and other locations now. They're becoming quite popular because they save lives. That's what the bottom line is.
Absolutely. The city of Los Angeles just had an awards banquet up at the Hodgkin Center right near Dodger Stadium, and they were showing that city employees that use these devices. I forgot how many people. I think the numbers were close to 60 people were saved because of these devices. Matter of fact, one of them was even a fireman.
Right.
So
right.
very important piece of equipment to learn how to use, especially if you have it readily available in your office.
Right.
And that would be the external
automatic external defibrillator.
That would be the external defibrillator as opposed to having to rip somebody's chest open and massage their heart, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
I carry one with me.
That's good.
In my vehicle.
Right.
And just so you know, a lot of law enforcement agencies are starting to put them in the back of their car. So don't be surprised if you see a police officer actually starting to administer that type of reaction. So there's more and more. Of course, you know, it all boils down to funding. You know, with budgets being the way they are, it's very difficult to get every police patrol car out there to have one of these things readily available.
They are not cheap.
No, they're close to $1,200 to $1,500 a piece.
They are. They are. And when we purchased ours 4 years ago, they were right at $1,500, $1,600 for the Zoll AED Plus. And we train all over our CPR AED. I have stories I know of people that have saved lives with them.
Absolutely. They do a great job. It was probably one of the best inventions ever made as far as I'm concerned. Anything that saves someone's life is more important than everything else.
Right. So, the stock market is coming back. The Dow hit an all-time high today. So
hopefully it'll stay there.
So we're as far as Wall Street is concerned, the direction is positive for the economy in general. Real estate is kind of still a little sideways, but maybe that'll get better. David, thank you so much for joining us today and bringing just an inside view. I really appreciate your coming because we get an inside view of the preparation and emergency management for the Port of Los Angeles, one of the busiest ports in the world, one of the busiest, if not the busiest port, including Los Angeles and Long Beach, in the country. And over 40% of goods that are brought into the country come through either the Port of Los Angeles or Long Beach, and that's amazing. That is amazing. Anything that you'd like to communicate to our listeners, David, in terms of events or other dates that are coming up for the Port of Los Angeles?
No, I mean, if you go to our webpage, www.portofLosAngeles.org, you could always look up on our website the special events. I will just say that the latest thing, our latest toy that we have down there, and we actually don't own it. It's it was taken over and brought in by the Pacific Battle Group as the USS Iowa. So where before there was nothing to come down really to see other than some, we have had a few other items, cruise centers and stuff like that, and part of the community. We now have a really true historical monument, as well as, don't forget, once you see that battleship, the USS Iowa, if you go down the road, I think it's to around Berth 56, there's also the old maritime ship, the Lane Victory. So that's readily available down there as well. So you got to realize that the port is in the process right now of recreating the entire what we call bridge to breakwater. So we're basically going to go from the rock formations that basically prevent all the waves from coming in all the way to the Vincent Thomas Bridge. That whole entire area along Harbor Boulevard is being redone. So if you want to see things that are starting to change and become more like the port of Long Beach, let's say, because how Pikes, if those have gone down there and seen how beautiful they've done, we're working on doing something very similar, making it look just as, more inviting for the consumers to come down and visit.
Okay. Like, will there be shopping, are you saying? Restaurants?
That's the long-term plan. There's a request for proposal from right now that's out, and I think that is being finalized right now for an architectural design and review to modernize the whole entire Ports of Call Village.
Mm-hmm.
And it's due. I mean, I think it was the early 60s?
Right.
So it's been around almost since as long as I've been alive. So
right.
it's definitely needs a good facelift. And over time, we'll see what happens. It should probably be done probably within 10 years or so.
Right.
Nothing is fast. It takes time.
Right.
Yep.
Well, my family's very, very familiar with Ports of Call. And also, we like to visit the Korean Freedom Bell, or Liberty Bell, Freedom Bell, I think it's called, right there in San Pedro, on top of the hill there, on the old Air Force Base.
That's the Fort MacArthur Upper Reservation.
Yes.
Yes.
Fort MacArthur, that's
yep.
right. That's right. Great location
Great
for
location.
Families. And
beautiful.
Now it's going to be even more of a destination. Well, again, it's been wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us, and I have to ask you, I'm looking at this picture of you, like, it looks like you're holding up a Chinook helicopter or something like that. What is that?
Oh, that, there's a place that was taken in Balad, Iraq.
Yeah.
That is actually a MiG that we captured years ago, and it's in a thing called the Boneyard. So it makes it look like I'm lifting an aircraft out. In reality, the aircraft is actually leaning, so I'm lifting up on it, making it look like I'm struggling to hold the whole aircraft up.
That's wild. Thank you so much, David. It's been a pleasure. And thank you, George.
Thank you. Thank you. I have a picture of my wife holding up the Leaning Tower of Pisa.
Okay.
See, there you go.
All right. And thank you, Jackie.
Always a pleasure, Jeff.
It's been a great pleasure. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see you shortly. Join us on Thursday for a great show with Chef Jack Witherspoon. Author, philanthropist, he's raised over $150,000 for for pediatric cancer research, leukemia in particular, and he's 12 years old. So don't miss that show. It's going to be amazing. Thank you very much. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye now.